Alrighty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's not waste any time because we got a ton of cuts from Indianapolis. It's time to update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We get to a news brief, and we do so right now.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Longtime Bucks general manager Jason Light obviously was not thrilled with the Liam Cohen departure and how everything did go down from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Here is Jason, though, earlier today at the Combine when pressed on the whole Liam Cohen situation.
I don't really want to go back in the past there. It's over.
Yeah.
I'll say that we have a lot of respect for Liam. He was a great coach, and you know, he's happy for him and his family, and it's a great opportunity for him.
Would you guys, is there anything in terms of like joint practices again with the Jaguars or Miami or any of those?
Well, everything's kind of on the table now. We'll have to see how the schedule comes out, but I mean, that wouldn't be a factor.
Yeah, you know, of course.
It's, you know, time heals.
Yeah, I think he's 100% right. Ultimately, like, you could be mad at somebody for leaving. Like, I had a boss once that was mad at me for leaving, and I left for a better opportunity, right? I was going from a part-time job to a full-time job with my name on it, and that boss was mad at me for leaving. I could tell it, but years later, you kind of reconcile, you reconnect, and you still talk because you're going from an offensive coordinator to a head coach. Now, the process, right, could have been better for Liam Cohen. Maybe the process, the way that I did it, could have been better as well. But ultimately, if you're either just part-time or you're just an offensive coordinator and you are becoming a full-time host or a full-time head coach, you know, relating it to the situation I was in, ultimately you're making the right move. You're taking a step up. You're taking the next jump. And I do think Jason Light's like, okay, yeah, we didn't love how he went about it. I mean, it felt like we were used a little bit to get what he wants, but ultimately we can't crush a guy for leaving us as an offensive coordinator. He did good things with us in a year and now becoming a head coach. So the tush push has popped back up and the Packers are trying to get it banned. Now, I respect the tush. Therefore, I think we should push the Packers away and we should not allow them to try to take away the tush push. But this is Brian Gutekunst of the Green Bay Packers on the tush push.
I know we're not very successful against it, I know that, but to be honest with you, I have not put much thought into it. It's been around for a while. We've used it in different fashions with our tight end. Again, I think there'll be a lot of discussions about it. I got to kind of look at some of the information as far as injury rates, things like that, to see. But we'll see.
It's kind of funny that Brian Gutekunst became the spokesperson today for the Green Bay Packers with the tush push. And just judging by that audio, it seems like he has no clue what's going on. Like, obviously, he knows the Packers want to get rid of this, but he seemed either as if he wasn't convincing or maybe he doesn't agree with what the Packers are trying to do. So more on the tush push. Let's go to Sean McDermott. His team couldn't execute it well in the AFC Championship game up against Kansas City Chiefs. This is Sean McDermott.
To me, there's always been an injury risk with that play. And I've expressed that opinion for the last couple of years or so when it really started to come into play the way it's being used. So I just feel like, you know, players' safety and the health and safety of our players has to be at the top of our game, which it is. The way that the techniques that are used with that play to me have been potentially contrary to the health and safety of the players. And so, again, you have to go back, though, in fairness to the injury data on the play. But I just think the optics of it, I'm not in love with.
So what is the injury data? Because it seems like people are looking at it, they're saying, oh, everyone's getting hurt, but I got to check the data to kind of support that claim. I think this is a bunch of baloney. I think the Eagles are just so exceptional at this. And they're already such a tough team to beat that now they won a Super Bowl and people are trying to just kind of put a dent into the armor that are the Philadelphia Eagles. But let's hear more. Raheem Morris, how about your thoughts on the tush push?
I thought it should have been illegal 3 years ago. The tush push play, I was never been a big fan.
Jeez.
There's just no other play in our game where you can absolutely get behind somebody and push them, pull them off, do anything.
So Sean McDermott hasn't got to a Super Bowl as a head coach. Brian Gutekunst, you know, done a nice job in Green Bay. Raheem Morris couldn't even win the NFC South last year. So let's hear from a winner. Here's Andy Reid on the tush push.
I understand how it can go both ways. I think it takes certain players to be able to do that. And that's not an easy thing for the center. I was close to their center, so I know that's not an easy thing to do. My hat goes off to them for making it as consistent as they are doing it. Now, there are other things you have to look at. You got to look at the injuries that take place, or, you know, whatever the other deals are that they evaluate on it. But, I mean, it's a heck of a play. I know that.
I'm pro tush push. I am. I have no issues with this whatsoever. I think this is a bunch of nonsense. The Eagles have run this to perfection. And also, if you don't like it, try to stop it. And also, just saying, oh, it's a dangerous play. So what? Every play we got to eliminate? Oh, what's next? A screen pass? Right? Where the blocking down the field and everyone trying to go get the running back or the wide receiver? Is that going to be deemed too dangerous as well? I just think this is absolutely ridiculous. But with that being said, it does. We're talking about a bunch of tushies. This does bring up a very important Zach Gelb Show question I never asked Stu and I've never asked Samter as well. If you only had to pick one, you're more of a, let's see how we can clean this up, a watermelon guy or a tush guy, if you know what I'm saying, Stu. Which one? If Pete Bellotti was running this board, this thing would be dumped already.
I'll go with the watermelon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Samter, what's your preference here?
Watermelon. No, I'm a tush guy. 100%
tush guy. I had to clean it up a little
bit. There's a way you could do it that's clean without having to say watermelon.
There is if you just go along with it. Now some kid's in the car asking his dad, well, what's so funny about the watermelons I had for lunch, Dad?
I mean, seedless are we talking about?
What?
Are we talking about seedless watermelons?
Just answer the question.
Tush. All the way.
Okay. I'm more of a watermelon
guy. I'll be honest. I thought this was, do you prefer tush push or brotherly shove?
Oh.
That's where I thought that was going. So that totally threw me off.
I always keep you on your toes still. So what do you prefer? Brotherly shove or the tush push? To me, the tush push sounds better.
Yeah, tush push. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the buffalo butt push? Buffalo. Because the Bills tried to do it. Buffalo butts.
You're just trying too hard now.
Trying too hard. Trying to come up with something for the Bills because they tried it.
Just answer the question. All you got to do is just answer the question. The ball's on the tee. You just got to make contact.
I was asking a new question.
Yeah. All righty. Let's keep it moving. I don't think the tush push should be outlawed here whatsoever. I think they should continue it. And if Sean McDermott and Brian Gutekunst and Raheem Morris don't like it, tough, try to stop it. Let's go to Raheem Morris on their starting quarterback situation.
Michael Penix is our quarterback, and Michael Penix will continue to be our quarterback. We stood here last year, and we talked about looking for that guy, and we believe we found him. And I got so much confidence in Michael Penix leading us into the future, and I believe our whole building does, and I believe our fan base does, and I believe our owner does, that we are really excited about that young man. Definitely disappointed in what happened and how we ended last season, but we got a lot of really good things, a lot of positive thoughts for us moving forward and how we want to go out here and try to win ultimately.
Yeah, okay, so then you get rid of Kirk Cousins, right? And Terry Fontenot's like, oh, no, we're good with Kirk Cousins being our backup. What do you actually think you're getting for Kirk Cousins? Because that contract is an atrocity right now. Like, why the heck would you want to trade for that contract unless you're taking a significant piece back? Ultimately, I think Kirk Cousins is going to get released, just like how ultimately I do think Myles Garrett is going to get traded. Alrighty, let's go to Mike Borgonzi. All eyes are on the number one pick with the Tennessee Titans. Mike Borgonzi, are you aiming at taking a QB with the number one pick?
At the end of the day, we have to make the best decision at this point for the Titans. And if we deem like taking a quarterback is the most important thing right now, then we'll do that. But we have to go through this process here. So this is like one touch point in the process. We've gone through the whole evaluation part. Now we're finally getting to sit down and meet with these guys and talk with them. We'll have pro days. We'll have 30-day visits. So we have to go through the whole process really to make that decision.
I respect the grind, and I've been one of those people that go to the press conference and you ask a very direct question. But you got to know you're not getting an answer for that. Hey, Mike, no one knows what you're doing with the number one pick. Are you aiming to take a quarterback? Do you expect an actual truthful answer there? I do not. Mike Borgonzi, are you open to trading back here in the draft?
Well, that's part of the strategy that you have to put together. Just like we're going to have a free agent strategy, there's going to be a draft strategy too. So we'll get together as a group and think through all that. But you certainly don't want to pass up on one of those players if you think they're there and an opportunity to trade back. Depends how far you can go back to get that player. So to your point, there's a strategy to it.
So there's a lot going on there. You're at number one. Would you be open to trading back? Yeah, but you don't want to go too far down because you still want to go get what your president of football operations said, or the president of the organization said, is a generational talent. Now, is the generational talent a Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders? Could that be viewed that way? Or is it how a lot of other people view it, as Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter? So one reporter just asked him outright, straight up, hey, is Travis Hunter, in your mind, a generational talent?
Mike, your president of Team Ops said that it would be hard to pass up a generational talent. Do you see a guy like Travis Hunter as that generational talent?
Yeah, I don't want to get into specifics on certain players, but there's certainly a few players at the top that kind of fit that bill.
Yeah. That's he is, but I'm not going to say, because then I'm giving you the quote that everyone's going to go run with and then put two and two together that we're taking Travis Hunter when we're probably not. Let's go to Mike Borgonzi. You know, there's a lot of Shedeur Sanders slander, which I just don't get. At the absolute latest, he's going to the 6th overall pick with the Las Vegas Raiders. And I think he'll go sooner than that. I don't think he's getting past the Giants at 3 if he's still available. But Mike Borgonzi spoke today about some of the critics suggesting that Shedeur Sanders doesn't have that strong of an arm.
I think he has plenty of arm strength.
Okay.
In some of the anticipatory throws sometimes make up for the lack of arm strength.
Right.
I've certainly seen quarterbacks over the years that are able to do that because they anticipate better. And a lot of that has to do with field instincts too. You know, if a player has a really good field vision and instincts and have a feel for it to anticipate some of those throws. There's been successful quarterbacks that really haven't had great arm talent that have played the league.
You know, he sounds like a little bit. He sounds like a more buttoned-up Charlie Casserly. Just the way he said quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. Where do you think Mike Borgonzi is from, by the way? If you just had to take a guess listening to him speak. Stu, any guesses on Borgonzi, where he's from?
I would say Midwest. I don't know.
Let's see. I mean, he's just in Kansas City. You know what? I thought I heard a little Massachusetts in him. I thought I heard a masshole. That's what I thought I heard. You know, I heard a little Sully in him. He is from Everett, Massachusetts. Now, let's see where Charlie Casserly is from. Because Charlie Casserly, if he is not from the Massachusetts area, he's from River Edge, New Jersey. All right. You know, I could see kind of with the way that he speaks, you know, hearing he's from New Jersey. So there is Mike Borgonzi, by the way. Joe Shane, do you regret not re-signing Saquon Barkley?
Yeah, I'm happy for Saquon. Obviously, he went on to win the Super Bowl, and we're wishing nothing but the best. Always going to evaluate all the decisions you make, and we're at a different place in our build. And again, love Saquon and wish him nothing but the best.
Let's be real. You could say we wish Saquon nothing but the best, but there's no way you're actually happy that Saquon Barkley, or should I say Saquon Barkley, that you're happy that he won a Super Bowl. Now, with that being said, I need to defend Joe Shane here for just a second. The idea of letting Saquon walk, even though Saquon had an all-time great season this past year, I got it, because you didn't want to allocate all that money to the running back position when the Giants are nowhere close to winning and you wanted to allocate those dollars elsewhere. If Saquon Barkley just went to the Texans or the Bears instead of going to the Philadelphia Eagles, it's a non-story. Like, Saquon would have been fine with the Bears. He would have been fine with the Texans. Neither would win a championship with him, but he wins a Super Bowl, has over 2,000 yards, and he goes from North Jersey down the turnpike to South Philadelphia, and he just rubs it in your face. So that's where it ends up blowing up in his face, is because he went to the Eagles. If he didn't go to the Eagles, he still would have been really good, but it wouldn't have gone to this level, and that's the one thing that Joe Shane couldn't control. How about Joe Shane's thoughts on having the number 3 overall pick?
We've got a lot of work to do on, you know, the number 3 pick. We've done a lot of work throughout the fall and the college prospects, but this phase of the calendar is, you know, getting to know who they are as people, what the fit's going to be, and then obviously free agency is before the draft. So 2 weeks from now, the roster will look different. So we know we have an idea of, you know, 3 to 5 players, 6 players, 7, whatever it may be, and move back scenarios, you can do that. We'll also look at, you know, moving up if that's a possibility. So it's exciting time for, you know, a year for us, and, you know, a chance to make some change on the roster. And so we'll look at all different, you know, scenarios.
Now, could they go make a move at quarterback before the draft? Absolutely. I still think that they're going to be taking a quarterback with the 3rd overall pick. Eric DaCosta, let's get serious here for a second on these serious allegations against his kicker, Justin Tucker.
The allegations are serious, concerning. The amount of allegations are serious and concerning. I think we're fortunate that the league is doing an investigation. We'll wait as patiently as we can for as much information as we can. We'll make our decisions based on that.
So here's a few things that the Ravens have going for them. And this may not sound politically correct, but it's just the truth. So obviously we've done the whole Justin Tucker story and we've heard about the horrifying allegations. Not that it makes it right, but these allegations are from like his rookie year and then a few years into the league. So I think not having it happen within the last 2 or 3 years, still horrible acts committed if they did get committed. I think that doesn't put that much public pressure on the Baltimore Ravens. Also, you're not in season right now, and it is in the offseason. And also, let's just call it what it is. And I'm not saying it makes it right or wrong. You're still a person, and you still, if you commit a horrible act, you should be held accountable for it. He's a kicker. I know he's arguably, I don't think he is the greatest kicker of all time, but he's arguably one of the greatest kickers of all time. If this was a more higher profile player, like a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver, I think it's a bigger story in terms of the everyday coverage of it. Like, this story's not going away. The league is going to launch an investigation. This is what I said it's going to happen. The league's going to do an investigation. There's not going to be a lot of public pressure on the Ravens. And then depending on what the league says, they're either going to suspend him or nothing's going to come out of it. And if they do suspend him, then the Ravens are going to have to determine if they're going to want to keep him on the roster. Because once the punishment comes out, that's when you're going to have the big outcry, I think, from the public with this situation. I thought this audio was nuts. I thought this was crazy. This is from the Scoop City podcast. Listen to Diana Russini and Chase Daniel discuss the Rams quarterback situation. There is a lot, and I mean a lot, to unpack here.
The Rams are comfortable with Jimmy Garoppolo.
They're comfortable with Jimmy G?
Well, Matthew Stafford's looking for over $50 million a year. We're talking 2 years, up to $110 million deal.
Can he get that?
Matthew goes out, sees that there's no market for him at the price he wants, and the Rams say, all right, we'll bring it back for $40 million. Don't you think that's a fair number?
$40 million is a travesty at this point. To be completely honest with you, from a player's perspective, I would retire. If you're offering $40 million, at some point, you got to be like, hold up. Trevor Lawrence is making 53. Tua is making that much money. Dak's making $60 million. I am 10 times better than these. I'm a dog. I'm a warrior. Like, no.
So there's a lot there. Diana Russini, first off, let's not bury the lead here, saying that the Rams would be fine with Jimmy G. I don't buy it. If Jimmy G's a starting quarterback for the Rams, all this positivity that I talked about with the Rams the last 2 years or so, right out the window. Goodbye, donezo. You can't even rely on that guy to stay healthy. Then Chase Daniel. I agree with you. Matthew Stafford should be making more money than he's currently making. We went through that yesterday. But you saying if he could only get $40 million when the rest of the market basically tells him that they're not willing to give him because the Rams are letting him talk to other teams right now, if you then tell me, oh, because you could only get $40 million a year, that's a travesty? And also, it would be enough for him to retire and he would walk away from that? Like, what are we doing? Matthew Stafford, yeah, he wants more money, but I think he's also planning to go get another championship. So there's a lot there that is just absolutely crazy. I told you this was a long news brief today. I even had the music.
Music ran out.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was like the Oscar music for a second. They were telling me to wrap it up, and then they went right to commercial break. All righty, let's just do a few more quick hitters, then we'll get on out of here and get to the break. Andrew Berry, the latest on the Myles Garrett trade requests.
Understand the trade requests and everything, but our stance really has not changed. You know, we can't imagine a situation where not having Miles as a part of the organization is best for the Browns. But we respect, we appreciate Miles, and you know, like I said, we're not interested in moving him.
All righty, that's a fair stance. Let's go to Brad Holmes on pursuing Myles Garrett.
Those guys are hard to acquire, and it's hard to keep them financially. You know, again, we have one that's due for an extension, and you know, so when you talk about adding another one, it's like, oh, well, all right, can you financially add another one? Because you want to add the other one on top of everything else that you have, and that makes it tough. Probably not. Yeah.
So what was that again at the end, Samter? I know it was like off mic, so it was tough to hear. Did they say, so is Myles Garrett someone you make that exception for?
Yeah, they said, would you pursue a high-level, not so many words, would you pursue a high-level pass rusher like Myles Garrett?
And he said, probably not.
Correct.
All righty. So I've been saying the five teams for Myles Garrett. I've been saying it, I believe, in this order. Commanders, Eagles, I think it was then Lions, Chiefs, and Bills. I think you got to bump the Lions down there a little bit, unless if Brad Holmes is like, hey, they're saying they're not trading him. I'm going to keep that information close to me and maybe make people think something that I'm not thinking. You know, that could be a possibility as well. All righty, that's a news brief. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll come on back. I want to get to two more things from the Combine. And there's a lot cooking on Geno Smith's future, which I'm very fascinated by. And also, one reporter's mission to just absolutely obliterate Kyle Shanahan. And I'm fascinated by this reporter. We'll get to all that when we return. So I understand with the public nature of this job, there's a lot of times like you have to give an instant reaction. And sometimes when you're giving that instant reaction, like last year, Santer and I flew to Arizona for the Final Four. On the flight, Stephon Diggs got traded to the Houston Texans. So if you're walking off the plane, like you got to give an immediate take, right? You got to get that out there to the masses. Actually, last year, I remember because I'm going on vacation for the rest of the week after this show. So I'm not here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'll be back Monday. I'm going to visit my grandma. I'm going to Florida. I'm also going to spend a night or two in Miami with a few friends, go to my favorite restaurant in Joe's Stone Crabs. But I last year, I remember when I was going to Florida, it was during a Rangers playoff game. And it was actually game six against the Hurricanes where Chris Kreider scored those three goals in the third period, had the hat trick, and they ended up advancing to the Eastern Conference Final. They ended up losing to the Florida Panthers. And I'm on the plane, and I'm like, I have the Wi-Fi, so I go, I could do an instant reaction video right now, but I don't know. There's something about the plane where I don't think you should be doing an instant reaction video, like giving a take and talking. I would feel weird. So I went into the bathroom, and as they call it on the airplane, the lavatory is very small, and I'm very tall and a large fella. So I was doing like this instant reaction video in the airplane bathroom. So I understand what I just said. But Stu, there's something that really just bugs me. If you're in the gym and someone's recording a video, or if you're in like a public place and you have someone with the camera up, live streaming, you know, it happened to us at the Super Bowl every day, Samter. And I understand when we're at Radio Row, we're like kind of like the animals at the petting zoo, and people are just taking pictures and they're recording you. But you have people that come up to you and they start asking you questions with the live stream. So I think there needs to be some etiquette. And I know everyone's trying to get content now and everyone's trying to get a reaction now, but it drives me. But I was working out at the gym yesterday and there's some lady who's taking like a full on video of her at the gym. And I'm like, I'm in a no-win situation here. I'm just trying to do the ab machine. I'm sitting there trying to get a few crunches in. You have a good-looking girl standing in front of me, taking this video, and I'm like, I'm the guy in the background right now just trying to do my workout. So I got up. I'm like, nothing well is going to come from this video. And I just moved, and I continued my workout somewhere else. But it annoys me. You know, when people just record in public and like you go to a baseball game now, someone's on a live stream and you could just be walking, talking to your friend and you have no clue someone's behind you with the camera in front of your face. So that bugs me, Samter. I don't know about you.
What's even worse is when they get upset with you for walking in front of their shot. Yeah. Right? You're at the gym, they're filming, and you have the audacity to go to a machine and you walk in front of them and they give you a hard time. Hey, I was filming. You know what? Go bleep yourself.
Yeah, it's annoying. So anyway, Grant Cohn, who I don't know if I like, but I'm fascinated by him. I think I like him. Now, he could be a pain in the ass, don't get me wrong. But he's someone that is an opinionated reporter, which I respect. And we talked about him with Fred Warner from the Niners at the Super Bowl. I'm like, hey, just wonder, what's your thoughts on Grant Cohn? Because I'm fascinated from about him from afar. And Fred basically said, you know, Grant, he's very opinionated. He's very passionate. But what I tell people that have a problem with him in our locker room is don't give him a reason to criticize you. Because he's not like looking to criticize you. I think he is. But if you play well, he praises you. If you don't play well, he criticizes you. So he just kind of holds you accountable. So anyway, Grant Cohn is flying out of Seattle. He lives in the San Francisco area. I guess they had to go to Seattle for a flight to get to Indianapolis, because that's probably not a popular flight to get to Indianapolis coming from the West Coast. So this is Grant's instant reaction walking through the airport after getting off his flight. Here's a little excerpt from that.
I'm walking through first class and I see Seattle Seahawks head coach Mike McDonald and Seattle Seahawks general manager John Schneider just sitting next to each other casually going to the combine like me. So I go to my seat in coach and I'm sitting there with takeoff. And I noticed this shorter, older gentleman with really white hair walking next to me. And he's trying to go to the bathroom, but the flight attendants are passing out beverages. So they tell him, sir, you're gonna have to go back to your seat until we're done. It was Pete Carroll, flying coach. Apparently the Raiders don't quite have the funds to send him first class like the Seahawks do with their personnel. So Pete Carroll waited and then went back to front first class, not to use the restroom really, but to just stand in first class without a first class ticket. And he did that for an hour. He was talking to Mike McDonald and John Schneider about God knows what.
So my favorite part about this, and it didn't even make it, right? Because we edited a bunch out there because it was like a long instant reaction video. He's just going through the airport with people behind him as he's just ranting about how Pete Carroll was on the flight, ironically, with John Schneider and Mike McDonald, and Pete Carroll didn't have a first class ticket. But there was one point in it where he goes, you know, I'm just sitting in coach. You heard him say that. And then he goes, I have the money to sit in first class, but I wasn't spending it. Like, you're a reporter at the end of the day. And Grant Cohn probably makes a good amount of money, right? Successful career. But it's not like there's some shame about, oh, you're in coach. Like, I'm flying coach tomorrow when I go to Florida. There's no shame in sitting in coach when you have a GM and a head coach sitting in first class. And then also, the genesis of your video is there is a future Hall of Fame coach who's not even sitting in first class. So I love kind of how you have to bring yourself into it from Grant Cohn. And then he goes at the end too, this part didn't make it, we'll get to more of it. He's like, oh yeah, and then there was, I don't know what Pete Carroll was talking about with John Schneider. Maybe they're talking about a Geno Smith trade. Just like the speculation from that was awesome. But Stu, my biggest takeaway is this. Pete Carroll. You sometimes hear the Raiders are, you know, not as well off financially as the other NFL franchises. They're flying Pete Carroll to the combine. And I would think most of these teams, but then you sometimes forget that not everyone's flying private. I think most of these teams would go private. But they have Pete Carroll flying in coach and not even first class when the guy that got rid of him pretty much is John Schneider and his replacement Mike McDonald are sitting there in first class. Your thoughts on the Raiders putting Pete Carroll in coach?
Yeah, it's not great. It's probably not a great look. Like you said, there's no shame in it, but just the fact that you had another team with their head coach in first class and he's not,
Now, there was a Seahawks team reporter that was on this flight too, so I guess all the Seahawks personnel was there. And he responded to Grant's video saying, in fairness to the Raiders, it was an emergency exit seat. And they also had an open seat next to him. So maybe okay. The Raiders realized, hey, we're not, maybe first class was sold out.
Like, maybe.
That could be a Raiders issue. Like, oh yeah, we got to go to the combine. We don't have a coach, right? They hire a coach late. So you got to have the name there on that, the actual name there. It's like just buy the ticket and then assign the name later. So maybe when they go, oh, Pete's going, we hire Pete Carroll, let's go get the flight. And I guess he's flying, you know, from Seattle. He probably still has a home there or something. So let's have him leave from Seattle. And then it's, okay, there's no more first class. We'll get you an emergency exit and also get the seat next to you. So two tickets that you end up getting. So you have all the leg room. And also, let's be real. If you could fly first class, you fly first class. You know, it's a nice experience. You know, I don't want to sound like Grant Cohn. I've done it once or twice. I'm sitting coach when I go to Florida, there and back on Wednesday and Sunday. But anytime you could sit first class, it is a very nice luxury. But if I'm not sitting first class, you know, all this business class and all that, give me an emergency exit seat. Now, I don't know how I'd be doing if the plane's going down, if there's an issue. But at that case, I don't think anyone's doing well. But the legroom and the emergency exit seat, Sue, is on. You don't even need the second seat next to you. Like, it's nice that the Raiders got him that, but you have leg room in the emergency exit seat. That's the best. And I think I want to say it's Delta. If you get their the I'm usually an aisle guy, but if you do a window on their emergency exit seat, they usually have the flight attendant sit across from you, and then there's not an extra seat there, so you get extra leg room with the emergency exit. Now, I think that is a premier seat on a plane. But how about Grant Cohn? That is reporting right there. Pete Carroll's not in first class. The guy that replaced him is, plus the GM that got rid of him is, and they were talking about something we don't know what they're talking about. And then he just threw out there, maybe it's a Geno Smith trade.
And he threw a awesome shot at Kyle Shanahan, too, for not being there.
You know what? I buried the lead. You almost made me forget about what I teased, too. Thank you, Stu. That's checks and balances at its finest. And then he just takes a shot at Kyle Shanahan. Pete Carroll's finding coach to get there, but Kyle Shanahan can't even get his ass, his GQ ass, to the combine. And this leads to one of the greatest bits, I think, in our medium right now. Grant Cohn not only takes a shot at Kyle Shanahan for not going to the combine, getting off the plane. If you go to his Twitter feed today, he's going to all these coaches' press conferences, and he's asking them, why do you go to the combine? So on his Twitter feed right now, why does Mike McDaniel go to the combine? Talking to Mike McDaniel. Why does Andy Reid go to the combine? Talking to Andy Reid. Why does, let's see, Nick Sirianni go to the combine? And Nick Sirianni, right? Grant Cohn missed that one. So he took the audio from my college co-host. Sorry, I couldn't say that for some reason. College radio co-host Chase Sr., who got the video. So, Grant Cohn, if he misses the opportunity to ask Nick Sirianni, just won the Super Bowl, why aren't you at the combine? I don't know what else he had to do. Maybe he's talking to somebody else. He's not talking to Shanahan because Shanahan's not there. But he gets it from somebody else and reposts it. Sean Payton, why do you come to the combine? And here is the cherry on top of the sundae. He asked Dan Campbell, hey, Dan, why do you go to the combine? And Dan looks him in the eyes and he goes, to talk to you, Grant. That's awesome. So you know what? Grant Cohn could be a pain in the ass sometimes. He is very entertaining. And if you're on his naughty list, ooh, I would not want to be on his naughty list. Final one. Here's John Schneider. This is on Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio and Chris Sims on the future of Geno Smith.
Is there any doubt that Geno Smith is the guy for 2025?
No, I mean, Geno, we'll be meeting with his guys down here. You know, he finished the season strong. He got banged up there towards the end. Really, really, really sucked it up. But like all of us, right, like you have some of those decisions you want to have back. You know, in totality, he had a really nice season. And, yeah, and I don't foresee him not being with us.
I think that could go either way. I think Geno Smith is going to be there next year, but are you going to get a long-term deal done? He's on the final year of his contract. You know, maybe you have to give him a little bit more money and you got to sweeten the pot this year, but I wouldn't extend him that much further. I think the Seahawks have a good destination. I don't know if DK Metcalf's in the cards for the future. He could get traded this offseason, people are saying. Tyler Lockett is getting a little bit older. You got Jackson Smith and Jigba. You got Kenneth Walker. You got two good corners. You know, I think Seattle is a quarterback away. They got a good quarterback, but they don't got a great quarterback. I wouldn't even say they got a very good quarterback. So with Geno now in his mid-30s, I would not be extending him too much advance into the future. Like, if you want to give him a two-year extension, and then it's really a one-year extension because you got some outs in it and you could allocate the money that way, you just got to bump up the salary for this year, that's fine. But I wouldn't get too crazy and give him too long of a contract to Geno Smith. All right, this is Zach Gelb, on the Infinity Sports Network. We got one more segment to play. When we do come on back, let's do some official predictions for Shedeur Sanders. I think we may start this as a bit on the show until the draft. We're just going to do a Shedeur Sanders pool. Everyone's going to give a prediction on where he's going to land, and we'll keep track of it, and we'll see who ends up being right. Update time first. Here's Zach. All right, it's Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. Let me play you this Adam Schefter sound because we've been talking about it. And let's see if it matches what is the narrative that's out there when he talks about the Cleveland Browns and what they're going to do with the number two overall pick. Here's Schefty.
The thing that I feel most comfortable and confident in this upcoming draft is that the Cleveland Browns at number two will wind up taking a quarterback because they have to, because logic dictates that, because common sense dictates that, because they have Deshaun Watson, who you don't even know is going to be able to play again in the upcoming season. You have all the money invested in him. So you need financial relief, and you need a quarterback. And the only way to do that is to be able to do it at number two.
So I guess my question would be, if Cam Ward does go one, does that mean Shedeur Sanders is definitely going to go two? Because he basically just said, they're going to take a quarterback, too. So does that mean Tennessee at one is going to take Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter, and then Cam Ward goes two? Because I think Cam Ward's going to be the first quarterback taken. Or is that, hey, they're taking a quarterback, doesn't matter who goes one. Even if Shedeur Sanders is there at two, they're going to take him. So that's the question that I have for Shefty and Adam Schefter. But let's go around the room here. Let's do the Shedeur Sanders pool, and I'll keep on asking people that come on the show where they think Shedeur Sanders is going to land from now into the NFL draft, which I believe is on April 24th, that Thursday night, for the first round coverage. Stu, where do you think your guy, potentially your guy, Shedeur Sanders is going to land?
I don't think he will be my guy, unfortunately, but I think he'll go to the Giants at three. That's my pick.
Okay, so Stu, Giants, three. Samter, what do you have cooking here?
He'll definitely be in New York with the New York Jets.
Ooh, so you're trading up to get him?
Either he's good. I mean, I'm seeing so much stuff where he's falling to six, falling to seven.
I don't buy that, though.
I'm hearing all these people saying he's not a first-round grade, that they wouldn't take him in the first round. I think someone's going to be desperate enough to take him, but at the end of the day, are you really hitching yourself to a guy that you don't believe in just because you need a quarterback? There's a lot of talented players out there that I think, you know, some of these guys might go with rather than like hitching their future with him. So I think he's either going to fall a little bit or the Jets might move up a little bit, but the Jets love him. So
that's how I think the Jets go get him. They got to go move up. They have to move up to get him, because let's just play this game. For Shedeur Sanders to get to seven to the Jets, these teams are going to have to pass up on him. Tennessee, I think that's likely. The Browns, uncertain now after the Schefter report. The Giants at three. Then also, you're going to need the Raiders at six. That's four teams. And only one I could confidently say are definitely going to pass up on him. And that's Tennessee. And the Jets are sitting there at seven. Like, Stu, could you imagine on draft night, if Shedeur Sanders is there at six and the Raiders don't take him, without even telling you who they take, at six, you would think by that point, Travis Hunter's off the board, Abdul Carter's off the board, Cam Ward is off the board, right? Even probably Mason Graham is off the board, you would think, at six. But if one of those guys maybe are available, okay, you could maybe justify it, but if those four guys are off the board, Cam Ward, Mason Graham, Travis Hunter, and Abdul Carter, and the Raiders see Shedeur Sanders there and they pass at him, you're probably screaming and throwing things at the television, right?
Yeah, it will not be a good night at the Stewart household.
You know what? Even though I just did a segment last how I don't like recording things publicly, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
Now, this wouldn't be public. I think we need a camera on you, Stu, for the Raiders' reaction to the sixth overall pick. And I think I need to put a camera on myself for the fourth overall pick for the Patriots. And if Samter, if you want to admit that this was all an act the last few years, you're not really a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs and your Jets are picking seven, we may need to put a camera on you as well. Are you ready to publicly acknowledge that you've thrown the Kansas City Chiefs to the curb?
No, it was never an act. I was absolutely a Chiefs fan. I've just given up on them now that they lost the Super Bowl. I'm going back to the Jets.
So now you're going back to the Jets. So you're not open for business. You're not going to just go jump onto another bandwagon.
If the Jets suck and the Chiefs are really good fighting for another Super Bowl, then yeah, bye-bye Jets. Let's go Chiefs.
Oh, my God.
I'll go back and forth all year long.
That's so obnoxious. So I will go with Shedeur Sanders with the Giants. So two Giants and then one Jets. That's what we end up having for the services of Shedeur Sanders, and I'll keep a running tab as we continue to ask a bunch of people on that. All righty, real quickly, I'll squeeze in Rob in Connecticut in just a second, but give me RG3 on the Dan Patrick Show talking about Tua Tagovailoa against Justin Herbert.
I said you can have Tua moving forward or Justin Herbert.
Who would I take?
Yeah.
I hate that question, Dan. Damn it. If I had to pick, I'm taking Tua Tagovailoa. I am. I'm taking Tua over Justin Herbert.
I know Tua has dominated Justin Herbert head-to-head, but with the injury concerns with Tua Tagovailoa, and I think the ceiling being higher for Justin Herbert, and both haven't won a playoff game yet, too, I think that Justin Herbert's going to go on to have the better career. I do.
Here's the quick question. I know you can't take away the injury history because that's what Tua's thing is, but just when they're healthy on the field playing at their best, who do you think is the better quarterback?
I think it's Herbert because, A, I would rather have him because he's bigger, and then also I think he has a stronger arm. That's why I would go with him over Tua Tagovailoa. All right, let me end the show with Rob in Connecticut. He wanted to chime in on college players that are most memorable. Samter, who'd you have for your college player?
Barry Sanders.
Stu, you had Tim Tebow. And I also had Reggie Bush. Rob, what do you got here real quickly?
Zach, real quick, enjoy your time with your grandma. And I was thinking about Ernie Davis. And also I was thinking about Bo Jackson. If I could turn back time and give them the gift of playing in the NFL longer, that would have been something else, especially Ernie Davis. He never got a chance. He was the first Black Heisman Trophy winner.
The Express, yeah.
Unbelievable player. But enjoy your time, and thanks for holding my interest. You're a crack up. I love you guys. Thank you.
You appreciate it, Rob. Thanks so much, and appreciate that we were able to squeeze in. I know I had you holding on long there, and two good answers, obviously, as well. And that will do it for this week's version of the Zach Gelb Show. We got Andy Gresh, I think, on Wednesday and Thursday, or Wednesday and Friday? All right, so he's Wednesday and Thursday. So, and then you have Linnell Willingham coming up on Friday. So they will entertain you, of course, from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, noon to 3 p.m. Pacific time. I'll be having a lot of Joe Stone Crab. Stone Crabs. We'll do the hash brown as well. Do the fried chicken there, the lobster mac and cheese, the tomato and cheese. A lot of good stuff there. Get a little salad, too. Try to make it somewhat healthy. The key lime pie as well. All righty. So I will be out until Monday. We'll be back Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. Stu Samter, everyone in the chat, thank you so much. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.